Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Can you hear me through my mic? I can't hear me through my mic sometimes. There we go. I got a couple of announcements this morning as you come in and settle yourselves. The first is, today we will be having a joint religious education class in celebration of the holidays. Ages 4K through high school are invited to join in the fun in the social hall, where we will be caring and sharing with others. There will also be holiday treats and a hot chocolate bar that will remain open during social hour today. So if you don't consider yourself quite a kid but need to leave early to join in on that, I guess it's okay. But the hot chocolate bar will be there for the social hour as well. Second announcement, please join us after the service in the social hall for our capital campaign soup fundraiser. So $5 will get you soup, a roll, fruit, and a beverage. You can't beat that. And they're all delicious. There are quite a selection of soups back there. So please come and join us for that. Our pulpit guest today is Rabbi Brian Komarov. Rabbi Komarov presently serves as a chaplain for Journey Care Hospice, based out of Glenview, Illinois. He also serves as spiritual leader of Congregation Chavra Or Tikva in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, and is chaplain at the rank of lieutenant commander for the United States Navy and Marine Reserves. He is the author of the book, Hasidic Stories That Happened to Me. We are pleased to welcome him to our pulpit today. Today's order of service, as always, includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. You can also find a calendar on our website at lcuuc.org. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love or how they present gender. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics that you may have with you here today as we begin our service. Thank you. If ever there were a time for a candle in the darkness, this would be it. Using a spark of hope, kindle the flame of love, ignite the light of peace, and feed the flame of justice. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 222, Miyal Milal. I'm not good at pronouncing this, in the gray hymnal. We will sing it in English. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I can't tell this morning whether I'm in synagogue or in church. Welcome. Today I invite you on a journey of hope and a journey of light, a journey of expanding our horizons both spiritually and socially. Come with me, don't hold back. The world is in great need of a healing. Today, I invite you to take part in that healing process.
Please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you this morning. I always like our chaos of introductions of everybody. That's just a beautiful part of the service to me. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. What makes a place welcoming? Many stores feel that it is all about the displays and having the right music playing endlessly into the room. Or they feel it is the lighting, its clarity and definition. And certainly these things can make a difference. But to me, what really makes a place welcoming is the people sharing it, the way the uniqueness of every individual doesn't get lost in a facade of sameness, but can remain unique and part of the place. It's like your favorite cafe, abuzz with lots of conversations and the smells of foods. So I'd like to try an experiment here in which we all take place. We are going to make a group sound, like the buzz of a cafe going on, but we're not going to actually use any words. You can close your eyes if you want. We're going to start with a little bit of silence, and then I want everybody to just start to hum. And it can be any letter of the alphabet, or it could be the letter M, like you've just said the word yum, and you're sitting on the M there. And I want you to start out quietly, and then raise it to a louder sound, and then let it fall back like a wave. And we'll do that three times. We'll just get this sort of sound that we've all created together. So are we ready?
Yes.
All right. Let's start with me not talking. We've got the buzz of spring going on there, I think. So thank you for being part of this place, whether it is just for today or for a lifetime. We're glad that you have chosen to join with us in worship and community and celebration. Now, we do our best to help our children learn to give generously and with an open heart. And one of the ways we do this is by collecting non-perishable food items each week for the local food pantries. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to stay up front first to hear a song, Happy Joyous Hanukkah by Woody Guthrie, and then to hear Rabbi Brian give a story.
Thank you.
sing together. It's really fun, and you'll learn it in no time. The choir learned it practically in no time. So I say you will be able to.
Give me a moment to plunk that. Okay. And the chorus goes like this. Eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Let's try it one more time, just for the heck of it. Eight are the days of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight are the days and eight are the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Now the choir will help with this a lot because they know when we're supposed to sing that chorus. So let's just do the song. It's fun, and it's talking about one of the things you sometimes see here is something called a menorah, and it has nine candles. The one for Hanukkah has nine candles. And we talk about what we can think about with those different candles. And there are eight candles, four on each side, and one in the middle. And we'll talk about those. Okay. Are you ready? How many nights of Hanukkah? Happy, joyous Hanukkah. Nights and days, days and nights, happy, joyous. Here we go. Eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. How many candles do I like? Happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the candles you should light, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. One for Moses on the mount, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Two for the mother and father love, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Three for the books that Ezra taught, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Four for the Hebrew children, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Oh, eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Sons of Hannah died, not so happy Hanukkah. Eight for the new build altar plate, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Oh, eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the night, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Nine is like the God that shines, happy, joyous Hanukkah. All around this world tonight, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Nine is for God's light that shines, eight for the new built altar place, seven for the sons of Hannah that died, six for the king tricks they played, five for the brothers Maccabee, four for the Hebrew children, three for the books that Ezra taught, two for the father and mother love, one for Moses on the mount. Oh, eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Oh, eight of the nights of Hanukkah, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Eight of the days and eight of the nights, happy, joyous Hanukkah. Very nice singing.
Hello there, kids. Can you smile for me? All right. Some of you still have teeth, or some of you have teeth already. Some of the people in the audience still have teeth, too. All right. A long, long time ago, there lived an old, old man. He was so old, he was 75 years old. And he had a long white beard. And he was planting trees. Now, this was no ordinary type of trees. This type of tree only blossomed fruit after 70 years. Can you imagine? But the fruit was so yummy and so delicious. Now a young man came to the old man and he wanted to ask him a question. But this young man had a lot of what we call chutzpah. Anybody here that know what the word chutzpah means? No, none of you kids are chutzpahdik. It means he had a lot of nerve. He would ask him strange questions. Well, you're going to find out. And he said to the old man, "Old man, why are you planting those trees? You're never going to live to see the fruit of those trees. You're an old geezer. You're about to die any second. What are you planting trees? They're not going to grow fruit for 70 years. And so the old wise man said to the youngster, he said, "Son, I know I will never live to see the fruit, but you see, somebody planted trees for me, and now I will plant trees for others." What do you think that story's about?
Giving.
Giving. All right, adults, help us out here. What is the story about? Or maybe some of the older kids.
An old man.
An old man. Come on. What's the story about?
Native American.
Okay. Good. What else? Somebody planted for me, and now I will plant for others. Right. So, a lot of people made this world beautiful before we got here, right? Is that true? Did you come into a beautiful world? Okay. How about if you make it even more beautiful than you left it? Huh? That you give and you do your part to keep it beautiful. And maybe even make it more beautiful than it was. Somebody gave it to you, and now you give it back to somebody else.
Okay, please join in singing the children out to their classrooms. This morning we will sing "This Little Light of Mine," number 118. When we give, we say yes. Yes to this place, to this community, and to the things in this world that we value. We say yes to the lights and candles, to being warm, to the staff and minister, to music and meetings. We say yes to Family Promise, the Hope Center, the food pantries of our communities, and to all the people they serve. We say, yes, I am a part of this. Yes, I can help. Let us grow together. The morning's offering will now be given and received. Thank you for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. As a community of human hands and hearts, this is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle at the candle table, but during the service, we speak aloud and a candle is lit for us. If you would like to share a joy or a concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Jerry. Would you please light two candles of concern? First one is for a longtime friend of mine going back to high school, Marilyn Arnold, who has contracted some kind of a lung and liver disease that they can't figure out what it is. She's in home hospice. Her husband, Tom, who's been a friend of mine since childhood, is her caregiver, and I'm afraid he's not bearing out very well either. Second would be for my cousin Bob Olson in the Twin Cities, who just found out he has bladder cancer.
Hi, this is Lois. I have a joy to share. We were awakened at midnight last night, and those calls are never good. But this time it was from my stepdaughter, calling from L.A., and she just got engaged. I don't remember a lot of the conversation, but I guess we'll talk today and find out more since we were both like, oh. But Chris, her fiance, had called Mike earlier in the week and sought his permission. So we knew it was coming. So.
This is Al. I just want to have a candle of joy lit for the young man in purple over here. Very pleased to have you back with us, Robin. Hope you're doing well. And if you would light one other candle for the hopefully undying patience of our spouses, my wife especially.
Hi, Al stole my thunder a little bit. I'm happy to have Robin here. He has fabulous new digs in Waukesha. You want to check it out. It's right near Good Harvest. Fabulous place. It's called Heritage something. Memory Care. But I think it went... Yeah, I'm hoping they have a vacant room for me. But I also am happy that Abby, even though she won't sit with us, is back for Christmas and arrived last night. So we've got a couple of joys.
This is Kristen. If you could light a candle for two friends who lost family members unexpectedly recently, my friend Michelle, who lost her 44-year-old brother, and my friend Vale, who lost her mom this week.
Please light a candle for a good friend who's recovering from a very serious case of sepsis, was hospitalized for several months, and is now home recovering with his family. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay. Hi, I'm Jennifer, and could you please light a candle of remembrance for my father, who died a year ago today from dementia? He had forgotten how to eat and swallow. We have not been able to have any sort of ceremony for him. Many of you may have heard about a woman in Florida. It's not the same woman, but about a 94-year-old woman who was evicted recently, and it's a very complicated and sad situation. And a lot of people have thought and said, where's the family? That actually could become my situation in a few years, because for the last 3 years we're trying to have my mother get services for my father, and she has some sort of mental illness that was not recognized by the courts. We actually wound up in court. She had a guardian. She now has had her rights restored, and she refuses any contact with any of us. So we're hoping to somehow get a service together for my dad at some point, but we're not sure. So I guess also a candle of concern for my mother, who will spend the second Christmas alone from all family. And we're hoping that she can find some peace.
My name is Barney. I'd like you to light two candles. One of them is for, yesterday on YouTube, I saw a video of Peter, Paul, and Mary singing a Solon in Paris, France, and it really took me back to 1963 when I first learned that music and fell in love with that group, especially Mary Travers, who passed on some years ago. The other candle is another candle of joy, and it's about being, for the first time in many years, being reunited with my Jewish brethren. I have such loving, fond memories of all my Jewish friends that I grew up with in Boston that were so very kind and loving to me in my adolescent years, so I'm so grateful for them, so... Thank you for having this service.
And we light the last candle for those joys and concerns which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today. This story concerns a monastery that had fallen upon hard times. It was once a great order, but because of this and that, all of its branch houses were lost, and there were only 5 monks left in the decaying house, the abbot and 4 others, all over 70 years in age. Clearly, it was a dying order. You know, we could just make it anybody over 36 to children. It's like, but in the deep woods surrounding the monastery, there was a little hut that a nearby rabbi occasionally used as a retreat. It occurred to the abbot one night that a visit to the rabbi might result in some advice to save his monastery. The rabbi welcomed the abbot to his hut, but when the abbot explained his visit, the rabbi could only say, "I know how it is. The spirit has gone out of the people. It is the same in my town. Almost no one comes to my synagogue anymore." So the old abbot and the old rabbi wept together. They read parts of the Bible and spoke of deep things. And when the abbot had to leave, they embraced each other. "It's been wonderful that we should meet after all these years," the abbot said. "But I have failed in my purpose for coming here. Is there nothing you can tell me that would help me save my dying order?" "No, I'm sorry," the rabbi responded. "I have no advice to give, but I can tell you a secret. The Messiah is one of you." When the abbot returned to the monastery, his fellow monks gathered around him to ask, "Well, what did the rabbi say?" "The rabbi said something very mysterious, something secret. He said that the Messiah is one of us. Could he really have meant it?" In the time that followed, the old monks wondered about the rabbi's words. "The Messiah is one of us? Could he possibly have meant one of us monks? If so, which one? Do you suppose he meant the abbot?" "Yeah, if he meant anybody, he probably meant the abbot. He has been our leader for more than a generation. On the other hand, he might have meant Brother Thomas. Certainly Brother Thomas is a holy man. Everybody knows that. Thomas is a man of light. He couldn't have meant Brother Elred. Elred gets crotchety at times. But come to think of it, even though he is a thorn in people's sides, when you look back on it, Elred is virtually always right. Okay, very right. Maybe the rabbi did mean Brother Elred. But surely not Brother Philip. Philip is so passive, a real nobody. But then, almost mysteriously, he has a gift for always being there when you need him. He just magically appears. Maybe Philip is the Messiah. Of course, the rabbi didn't mean me. He couldn't possibly have meant me. I'm just an ordinary person. But suppose he did. Suppose I am the Messiah. Oh, God, not me. I couldn't be that important, could I? As they contemplated, the old monks began to treat each other with extraordinary respect on the chance that one among them might be the Messiah. And they began to treat themselves with extraordinary respect, too, just in case they might be the one, after all. People still did occasionally come to the monastery in its beautiful forest, to picnic on its tiny lawn, to wander along some of its paths, even to meditate in the dilapidated chapel. As they did so, they sensed the aura of extraordinary respect that began to surround the 5 old monks and seemed to radiate out from them and permeate the atmosphere of the place. There was something strangely compelling about it. Hardly knowing why, they began to come back to the monastery more, to picnic, to play, and at last, to pray. They brought their friends to this special place, and their friends brought their friends. Then some of the younger men who came to visit the monastery started to talk more and more with the old monks and to appreciate the wisdom that was shared. After a while, one asked if he could join them, then another, and another. So within a few years, the monastery had once again become a thriving order, and thanks to the rabbi's gift, a vibrant center of light and spirituality in the realm. Here ends the first reading.
We trust that beyond the absence there is a presence. That beyond the pain, there can be healing. That beyond the anger, there may be peace. That beyond the hurting, there may be forgiveness. That beyond the silence, there may be a word. That beyond the word, there may be understanding. And through that understanding, there is love. Please join me for just a few minutes of listening to the still small voice within us for a moment of silence. Thank you.
Hope rises. It rises from the heart of life, here and now, beating with joy and sorrow. Hope longs. It longs for good to be affirmed, for justice and love to prevail, for suffering to be alleviated, and for life to flourish in peace. Hope remembers. It remembers the dreams of those who have gone before and reaches for connection with them across the boundary of death. Hope acts. It acts to bless, to protest, and to repair. Here ends the second reading. We will be singing hymn number 223, is that correct? Okay. Number 223, Rock of Ages, Let Our Song. Terry Silverman is going to sing the first verse in Hebrew. And after she has sung the first verse, then I'm going to ask you to rise in body or spirit and join in singing the hymn in English, starting again with the first verse.
Thank you.
This reading is from Winter Lake by Elizabeth Lerner. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the treasures of the hail? From whose womb did the ice come forth, and who has given birth to the hoarfrost of heaven? The waters become hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. From Job chapter 38. One crisp, frozen winter night, as a snowfall drifted to its conclusion, I walked with friends down from my old cottage in New York State to a nearby lake. As the last flakes wafted down, they fell from a sky of clear and darkest black. The stars shone in unparalleled numbers and allure. The lake was frozen solid and covered in fresh snow, a cleared expanse of white without even a branch to mar it. We admired it, and then, of course, couldn't resist marring it ourselves. We walked on water. We didn't come to skate or laugh or cry out or for any experience I had ever had on ice before. We came in silence, walked out onto the lake, and watched the wide night sky above, framed at the edges by the intricate patterns of snow-covered branches. We bent down and brushed the snow from the surface of the lake. We saw the gleam of the ice and the blackness of the sky reflected in the blackness of the frozen lake, with the white snow all around. The air was cold and still. The midnight, midwinter woods kept silence. The landscape was without color or sound, yet it wasn't bleak. It was filled with magic and mystery, with intense, unprecedented beauty. It was not the lake I knew, that I mundanely jogged around and fished in and hiked near with my dog and cats. This was not even the nighttime woods I knew, full of insects and birds and snakes and sound, and the rich smells of earth and fresh water and decaying leaves. This was the garden of night in the land of the Snow Queen, a place of clarity and cold and black and white, sky and land and water and peace such as I had never beheld before. It was not a hostile climate, although there was no life in it, and not empty, though it was stark in its elements. It was as though the universe came down and touched our planet there, and the two merged, simple and eternal, though all would be changed there in the minutes and hours by the life that was in fact everywhere, concealed, protected, waiting. Life is laden with opportunities for miracle or beauty, moments of choice that bless us if we seize them, even in a cold season. I have entered the storehouses of the snow, seen the treasuries of hail, seen ice birthed on the earth, lifted my face to the hoarfrost of heaven, walked on water hard as stone, and looked into the frozen deep. And it was good. Here ends the third reading.
That was beautiful. Okay, everybody, I've definitely concluded that I am in synagogue. We're going to do this morning service in kind of two different parts, sermon, I should say, in two different parts. I'm going to give a little question and answer, and then I'm going to shift gears and go into the actual sermon, and you'll know when that happens, because I'm not going to ask any more questions, or at least they'll be rhetorical. That means the preacher knows all the answers. Okay, first question, Hanukkah. When was Hanukkah? When was the time? What year? Around what year was Hanukkah? How long ago? Who knows? Okay.
500 BC.
Close. Very close. Okay. About the year 250 BC, which makes it, what was standing at that time? In Israel. Close? Second Temple. Okay, very good. Let's have a little history lesson. Moses goes up to the mountain. He gets what? Tablets, Ten Commandments. What happens to the Ten Commandments? They get broken. He breaks them, right? People are worshiping the idol. He gets upset. He breaks the commandments. Then what happens after that? There's a second set of tablets. What's the difference between the first and the second? Anybody know? Come on, people. You're spending too much time at Whole Foods. The first set was written by the finger of God. The second set had to be written by Moses himself. Right? Where were these tablets put, stored? Ark of the Covenant. Okay, who saw the movie? Everybody here. All three parts, right? Okay, Ark of the Covenant. Ark of the Covenant then goes where? Travels in what? Come on. All right, in a tent. In a tent that's called a tabernacle. Very good. Somebody went to Sunday school. Hope it was me. Actually, I flunked out. That's true. And you're asking why I'm up here. Okay, 500 years, the Ark of the Covenant with the tablets are in the tabernacle. Moses dies in the desert. Joshua crosses over the Jordan, brings the people into the land. And then there's a bunch of rulers called the Judges, right? We have the book of Judges. That whole era lasts for approximately another 500 years. Until the prophets reveal of what is called in the Bible, the place where I shall choose, right? The final resting place for the Ark of the Covenant. Where is that? Jerusalem. Where in Jerusalem is it? Temple Mount. Very good. Who built the first temple? Solomon. Who wanted to build the first temple? David. And why was David not allowed to build the first temple?
Sinned.
And what particular sin, though? It wasn't Bathsheba. Why wouldn't God allow David to build the temple? Because his hands was full of blood. He killed people in battle, even though he killed defending his nation. God said, still, your hands will be full of blood. You may not build my temple. Rather, your son, who will never be involved in war, will build my temple. His name is Solomon, which is in Hebrew. Shlomo, and the word Shlomo comes from the word in Hebrew, Shalom, peace. So Solomon was never involved in war. He never had to kill anyone. And therefore, he was chosen to build the temple. David was allowed to build the foundations, like the basement area of the temple. And if you go into the Temple Mount now, you can actually go underneath the western wall and see those foundations. First temple stood for 430 years. Destroyed by whom? It's in the book of Jeremiah. Nebuchadnezzar. From the nation of Babylonia. Correct. Good. Very good. Good. The people go into exile for 70 years. I'm taking more than 10 minutes, ain't I? I haven't even started the sermon. 70 years, a new superpower takes over Babylonia. Those are the Persians. The story of Esther unfolds. The Jews return back with the prophet. We mentioned it here. Ezra and build the second temple. Second temple lasts for 460 years. Who came at the end of the second temple period? I'm walking out of here. This is too much for me. Second temple period. Who's the person who came at the end of the second temple period? Jesus, you guys can't get this. That's from the rabbi. Okay. Right. Jesus, right? The second temple period was, second temple was destroyed in 70 AD, right? So Jesus came at the very end of it, right? Hanukkah happened in the middle of the second temple period, which was about 200, 250 BCE, okay? The Greeks were the superpower of the world at that time. They had overpowered the Persians, and they were the superpower. They came in, and one of the, amongst the many countries that they dominated, was Israel. And eventually they said to the Jews, we've got a new policy going on. Everybody's got to dress like us. Everybody's got to think like us. And everybody's got to worship like us. The same gods. And the Jews said, no, we refuse. We refuse to submit ourselves to your philosophy of life. We refuse to bow down to your idols. And we will keep our faith. Thank you very much. And the Greeks laughed at them and said, we're the superpower of the world. We've just dominated the world. No one can defeat us. You have a choice here. Either you do what we say or we're going to kill you. Nice guys. So the Jews said, then we'd rather be killed. And so they fought a war. And it was a long war. The Greeks had a military that was unmatched, that humanity had never known before. And the Jews were a bunch of Einsteins running around who didn't know how to fight. But eventually, after years of fighting, miraculously, the Jews were able to chase out the Greeks and win the war, even though they were overpowered in every way. During the fighting, the Greeks entered into the temple and kind of threw everything around. And one of the things that they threw around was the big candelarium. Had that candelabrum actually had just six branches of light on it. And it was oil lit. And after they had chased the Greeks out of the temple and they chased them out of the land, they came into the temple and they wanted to light this big candelabra. But the problem was there's only one little flask of oil left. And this flask would only burn for one day. And it took 4 days to go all the way up to the north in Galilee. If you know where Jerusalem is in Israel, it's the center of Israel. And it took them 4 days by donkey to go all the way up the mountains to Galilee, where the olives were growing, to press them and to come down was another 4 days. 8 days. And so they put the little flask of oil into the candelabrum, and instead of burning for just one day, it burned for 8 days. So the story of Hanukkah was really two miracles. One was this tremendous victory against all odds, and the second was this little candle that was supposed to burn for just one night, but turned out to burn for 8 nights. And there was no interruption of burning of the candelabra in the temple. I want you to put this question now on the burner of your minds. Asking a question without getting an answer. You know what that means? Shifting into preacher mode here. What is the difference between Unitarian Universalists on one hand and the theology of Baha'i and New Age spiritualism on the other? I want you to think about that for just a moment. And now I want you, now I'm going to ask you another question. Is there just one kind of butterfly in this world? Is there just one kind of tree in this world? Is there just one kind of dog or cat in this world? Of course not. There's thousands of different kinds of butterflies. There's thousands of different kinds of trees. There's thousands of different kinds of dogs and thousands of different kinds of cats, and each one is unique in its own purpose. And each one can do something that the other one can't. Each one is a special glory to this world that no other dog is, and no other cat is, and no other flower is, and no other tree is. You think God likes diversity? Why are we surprised that there are people of different colors that God made? This is a bad thing? Every other thing has diversity. And we say because your skin is different than mine, I'm above you? No. We don't deny. We don't say this is a colorless world. We're all colorless. You have a beautiful heritage being black. You have a beautiful heritage being Asian. You have a beautiful heritage being white. Whatever you are, you're not to deny it. It's the diversity who you are. The story of Hanukkah tells us that the messianic period is not one where we deny all faiths or where all faiths are one, supposedly combined, clumped together, but rather the messianic period is a period where we respect all different faiths, where we have maturity to say, I disagree with you, but I still respect from where you're coming from. I respect who you are. And that, my friends, is the difference between Universal Unitarian and Baha'i, or New Age spirituality. Because in Baha'i and universal spirituality, the idea is that it's all one. It's all one faith. It's all one religion. And that's not true. What the Unitarians do is exactly what Hanukkah aimed to do. In other words, understand exactly what this is telling you. We're all different, but we all have to respect one another for who we are, and respect and value and love those differences for what they are and who they are. This is the story, this is the teaching of Hanukkah. That they were, it's not to deny all faith, it's not to have no faith, but to respect each other's faith. You have to be proud of who you are, especially since the Unitarian belief that you have brings out the beauty of each faith in each human being. You should be proud of that. And so my blessing to you is that you should all stand proud with the faith that you have and the love that you have for all others.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 146, Soon the Day Will Arrive, the Gray Hymn.
You're Adnoi Panave Lacha Vahunacha, Visa Adnoi Panave Lacha Vyasam Lacha Shalom. And so may the Lord bless you and may He protect you. May He make His face to shine upon you and may He bless you all with peace. And let us say, Amen.